Psalm 39, verse 1. I said, I will watch my ways so that I don't sin with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with a bridle while the wicked is before me. Well, I suggest that Psalm 39, located as it is between Psalms 38 and 40, is continuing David's reflections upon his sin with Bathsheba. Psalm 38 and Psalm 40 are very clearly in that context, and I suggest that Psalm 39 is likewise. So, he is saying, retrospectively, I said in the past that I will watch my ways so that I don't sin with my tongue, I'll keep my mouth with a bridle. In Psalm 32, which is definitely a Bathsheba psalm, he says that men ought to learn from his example and not be as horses who must have their mouths kept in with a bridle. So, you see the connection. He's looking back and he's saying, yeah, before I sinned with Bathsheba and killed Uriah, I said, I will watch my ways so that I don't sin with my tongue, I'll keep my mouth with a bridle. In other words, I will control myself as if I am a horse with a bridle that can be yanked here and there to stop me sinning. I'll watch my ways so that I don't sin with my tongue. But then he prays in Psalm 32, verse 9, follow my example, and don't be like horses who must have their mouths kept in with a bridle. I think the connection is saying this. He's saying that before I sinned with Bathsheba, I really thought that I could keep myself from sinning by my own steel self-will. I could put a bridle in my mouth and control myself, and by my own sort of steel will, I could stop myself from sinning. But he's saying, no. That wasn't the way, because look what I did. With that attitude, I committed adultery with Bathsheba and I got her husband murdered. So I wasn't strong enough. The way to go, he's saying, is to not be like that. Don't be like a horse that must be controlled with a bridle. Be awed by grace. The grace, David is saying, that I received, and David is every man. He's quoted, the words of Psalm 32 are quoted about all of us by Paul in Romans 4. So I think the connection, as I say, is in order to show us that you cannot achieve sort of avoidance of sin by your own steel will. He's saying, I tried that, this is what I said, but now, connecting with Psalm 32, I really advise that you're not like I was, thinking that you can control yourself like you're a horse with a bridle, yanking yourself here or there. That doesn't work. Look at me. This is what it got me. And this is why, you see, the legalistic approach does not actually stop people from sinning. Paul says this at the end of Colossians 2, where he says that all these Jewish commandments about controlling yourself from not eating this or touching that, although they might appear commendable, and they appear to be an example of steel will sort of controlling the flesh, he says they are not actually helpful in overcoming the flesh. And you see this, unfortunately, in real life with people who are very religious and yet very legalistic, and they end up falling into major sin. And they end up being very lacking in self-control in some ways. They just don't have the steel within them, neither do any of us, to achieve spirituality. The way to spirituality, according to the New Testament, is through God's influence, through the Spirit. And that is connected with grace, insofar as the Greek word charis, which is translated grace, is the same word translated gift. And it's often used about the gift of the Spirit. And what is the gift of the Spirit? Well, eventually, ultimately, the gift of the Spirit is to be spiritually minded, strengthened by His might, by His Spirit, in the inner man, is how Paul terms it in Ephesians. The love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Spirit which is given unto us, Romans 5:5. All the time, the New Testament is saying that the essential gift of the Spirit is in our hearts. It is the power to be like Jesus. That is the Spirit of Christ. And so, David is the parade example. I'm not saying, of course, don't exercise self-control. But I think when the flesh lusts against the spirit, Galatians, you do not do the things that you would. Because if you're in a conflict mentality all the time, with your knuckles, as it were, white from attempting to achieve self-control and attempting to overcome, you won't get there. So when Paul says the flesh lusts against the spirit and the spirit against the flesh, and so you cannot do the things that you would, I think that what he's saying is, yeah, when you're in that conflict mentality, when you're in a bunker mentality against sin, trying to force yourself to win this endless battle, you cannot do the things that you would like to do. And I think this is what Romans 7 is talking about. Paul is being autobiographical there. He's saying that this is how it was with him, that when he tried to be righteous, he found he couldn't be. And so you come to Romans 8, which is all about the ministry of the Spirit, and he gets absolutely carried away in praise of God's grace, that God, through the gift of the Spirit that Romans 8 is talking about all the way through, he will achieve this in you. And this is why I think we get frustrated. Oh, why doesn't the computer work? Oh, why did that program freeze up? Oh, why did I take a wrong turning? Why didn't she come on time? Oh, I'm going to be late. All these petty frustrations are really all the mentality of, I want to do it in my strength. It's the mentality that says, I can somehow make life work in my own strength, but then you keep finding that you can't. And this goes wrong, and that goes wrong, and you get a puncture, you get a flat tire, you find that you've come down with the flu, or whatever it might be, and bigger things than that, so that you cannot be as you would wish to be. But the call of Jesus is to all joy and peace through believing. That is the way of the Spirit. And all these petty frustrations are then seen differently, and we are not so desperately frustrated by them, because God is in control, and this is of him. And so, as I say, to come back to our psalm here, Psalm 39, he's reflecting on how I did say, before I sinned, I will watch my ways, I will keep my mouth with a bridle, I will yank myself here and there into forced obedience, into forced submission to God's way. But then when he does sin with Bathsheba, and he realizes, wow, what a blessed man I am, saved by grace and not by works, then he says, Psalm 32, verse 9, do not be like the horse that must have its mouth kept in with a bridle. Don't be like I was. Because all attempts at sort of steel-willed obedience and beating yourself into submission to God's ways don't work. And David is saying, look how it went with me, with Bathsheba and Uriah. It was, I suppose, out of character with David, I think, overall, but all the same, he did it. And he then stands as every man, really, as the parade example of trying to beat yourself into obedience, and you don't get there. And this is not the path to all joy and peace through believing. How can we rejoice in the wonderful blessedness of being in Christ and being assured of our eternity and having absolute joy, absolute peace? How can we have those things if you are endlessly having to beat yourself up into obedience? You don't have the steel in your soul to do that. And yet, there is no reason, therefore, to give up on Christianity. It's rather that you didn't quite get it as it really is when you first believed. And that's okay. We all move on. And David, as I say, is urging us to move on and to not be like him, thinking you can control your mouth and your life, the direction of your life, with a bridle like you're a horse. Do not be like that, he says in Psalm 32, verse 9. And here in Psalm 39, verse 1, he's saying, that's how I used to be before I sinned with Bathsheba and encountered grace.